Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
And welcome to Onceable episode 101. I'm Brittany, and tonight we'll be talking about Once Upon a Time season 6 episode 8, I'll Be Your Mirror. And I'm joined by Karen, Kristen, and Laura. Hi guys, how's it going?
Hey, good.
Hi.
All right, so if anyone wants to talk to us about this episode, you can reach us on Twitter at Onceable, or comment on this post on hypeable.com, which is the headquarters for everything Once Upon a Time. You can comment on this or any of the other posts that we have going on over there. Let's get a general consensus for what has happened in this episode and how we feel about it. So let's start with Laura. Thumbs up or thumbs down for this week?
I'm kind of thumbs sideways-ish on this one. I liked, like, certain storylines I liked a lot. I really enjoyed the Regina and Emma partnership, and I was good with that. I thought I liked seeing the dragon again. I liked the Henry and Violet thing. I have huge issues with the way Rumpel treats Belle and Belle's apparent lack of telling him where to go and how to do it. And I like the Snow and Charming stuff. So it's like, that's thumbs up, but then the whole Belle Rumpel thing for me is very thumbs down. So I guess that in the end comes into a thumb sideways.
Awesome. And Karen, what about you?
This episode definitely gets a thumbs up for me. I really enjoyed it. For the first time in a really long time, I saw more than just Once Upon a Time's potential. I saw them actually enact a lot of the things that we've been wanting to see from this show. And yeah, I mean, like, I'm really mad at Rumpel right now. Kristen saw me in person, like, actually physically set my phone down on the table because I was about to throw it across the room. But other than that, the rest of the show was fantastic, and I really enjoyed it.
Awesome. And Kristen, since you were sitting right next to her, what was your reaction?
Yes, this episode is definitely a thumbs up for me too. I really, really liked the episode. In addition to all of the wonderful things, including that amazing montage to start the episode, which I'm sorry was just genius and adorable.
Cool.
Yeah. I also am pissed at Rumpel, but I actually like that they're turning him into this horrible, awful guy again, because I'm tired of down on his luck, gee golly, oh whiz, we should feel bad for him. Like, let's make him evil, let's give him a storyline where he's not redeemable, and let's get rid of him and be done with it. Because he can't come back. And now he's crossing lines where I don't think he can come back. So as much as I hate what he's doing and I don't like it, I like what it's doing for the show. So thumbs up for me.
Yeah, I'm also going to go with a thumbs up. I was messaging Karen during the episode saying, did they start listening to Onceable or start reading my recaps about how frustrated I am with this show? Because they crossed off a lot of issues that I've been having, or we've been having collectively with this series, especially the lack of using Henry and how awful Rumpel is, which I think that they're finally pushing him, like you said, Kristen, to a place where he can't come back from. And they gave Henry something to do. They brought in more Greek mythology. They used the CGI budget wisely. There was just a lot going on here that was pretty, pretty great in terms of advancing some of the stuff we've been having issues with. Let's move into favorite quotes, and we'll start with Laura again.
I really liked the quote from the dragon when the dragon was talking to Regina and Emma and talking about, you know, Regina kind of being split in half, and the dragon looks at her and goes, it's the balance. I mean, it was part of a larger quote, but my part that I really liked about it is when he said, it's the balance, and you wanted to go, duh, because I feel like there should have been more attention being paid of putting together, like he's going, it's the light and the dark, it's the balance of like putting Regina back together again. Like, it just strikes me that they're not thinking that that is the solution, and that really should be the solution, because you have evil, wicked queen Regina, and then you've got Regina, who's nice Regina, but can't make decisions about things, I feel like you got to put them back together again. And I'm just surprised that that's not dawned on anybody until the dragon kind of said that. So that's why I liked that one.
Awesome. And what about you, Karen?
Mine's a stupid one, to be perfectly honest, but it's when Henry just says, I'm just a middle schooler wearing grandpa's tie. And I just thought it was really cute. And also, like, no, Henry, you are clearly the hero of Once Upon a Time. And if nobody believed that before, they should believe it now, because he is quickly becoming one of my all-time favorite characters in the entire show overall, and he's definitely not just a middle schooler wearing his grandpa's tie.
No, well, can I just say, the suit, that very tailored suit, I mean, not for nothing, no middle schooler looks that good in a suit. I was looking at that, and I'm like, how much did the costume department taper and tuck? And I mean, it was just like, my God, Henry's gone to Armani. Does Armani have a chapter in Storybrooke that we were all unaware of? I mean, it is so, I mean, don't get me wrong, he looked great. I thought Jared Gilmore looked great in the suit, but most, you know, middle schoolers, when they have to get a suit, you know, it's not like it's your dad's suit that's very custom made to you because you're not going to grow or anything. I just thought, wow, I can't believe how, like, perfectly tailored that suit is to him.
Yeah, he looked really sharp, too. It was nice. Kristen, what was your favorite quote?
Mine comes from Emma. It's toward the beginning of the episode when she's talking about, like, finding the dragon, and she's talking to, I think, Regina, and she says, of course it would help if he had, like, a name. Just Emma being Emma and telling it like it is. Like, yeah, it probably would be easier if you weren't looking for the dragon.
Yeah, and the fact that she was like, I called all over New York. I'm like, who did you call? Do you have contacts in New York?
Like, and what did you say? I'm looking for the dragon? Like, I'm surprised you got anywhere.
Yeah, that was interesting. I didn't really have a favorite quote. Well, there was a lot of things that I wrote down originally, but I've deleted since in my notes. But there was this one moment where Aladdin and Jasmine were talking on the street, and basically Aladdin's entire throwaway lines about trying to explain where the genie went was so lame and so bad. They're like, we need to write off Wonderland in one sentence, so here it is. And he was just like, oh, don't worry, he's free now. And I'm like, yeah, listen, you didn't even know him. He's been in Wonderland for how many years? And, like, he has nothing to do with Agrabah anymore. So that line just, his explanation of just getting rid of Wonderland, I thought, was so eye roll worthy in such a wonderful other episode. Let's talk about mirrors for a minute, because Karen so wonderfully suggested last week that there are mirrors popping up everywhere and I should write a feature about it. And so I did. And I spent a lot of time writing about mirrors and thinking about mirrors and alternate universes and what it would mean to trap someone in a mirrorverse.
And I would just like to point out that, yes, I suggested this, and yet in the doc she's written, Karen made me write 900 words on mirrors.
Well, because when Karen so nicely is like, that's a good idea, you should do it, I'm like, okay, great. So I feel like Karen's sitting on my shoulder being like, did you write that piece yet? Even though she's not, she like, and I just took it out on her anyway.
It's okay, I can take it.
But yeah, so we, I mean, obviously the tables turned. We knew that this plan was not going to pan out the way it was supposed to, because, like the Evil Queen says, her and Regina are basically the same person. They think about the same things. They're obviously going to have the same ideas. And so the Evil Queen turns the tables on Regina and Emma and traps them in this mirror universe where they can only see out. Like, they can't communicate to anyone outside the world, but they can see what people are doing in their mirror, which is a horrible, I don't know if I'd like that at all, because, like, we saw with that one guy, like, you can catch someone doing something, like, really weird, and that's, like, the tamest thing that someone was doing. Like, Granny was fixing her hair, and Henry was just staring at himself, so, I mean, they were pretty tame, but they could have gone a little further with that. But I thought the most interesting part about the mirror place was the fact that we saw where Sydney was and how tortured he would have been there, only being able to glimpse into people's lives from an outside perspective and communicating with someone when they chose to. And so I thought that that was a really interesting aspect of this world and seeing the type of prison that he was in and how he was working to get out of it. What did you guys think of the actual landscape and construction of how the mirror universe works?
It looked really cool, to be honest. Like, the whole aesthetic of that set was really dark and twisted, but at the same time, felt very magical too. So I could see definitely why it would be a dark place for somebody to be all the time. At the same time, like, you have not power, because you're obviously, anybody who's there is trapped, but the ability to go and look at people from place to place, and like, it's a little creepy, but to have that insight all over Storybrooke, for instance, would obviously be very helpful. But yeah, the whole look of the set was really cool. And I liked that they didn't have to bring Sydney back to bring that character back into the story and make it relevant and tie it to another part of Once Upon a Time that we've already seen before, because it is really tragic that he was trapped there and you kind of don't think about it from the outside, from the other side of the mirror. But looking at this now and thinking back to his relationship with Regina and how he lived his life because of her, yeah, it's really sad.
Yeah, the mirror world was definitely a really interesting place. Like, just the rules of it and seeing, you know, how it works and knowing that it's kind of this endless expanse of mirrors. Like, the dragon was there and they didn't know until he just kind of popped up, and like, all of that just seemed really, it's a really interesting thing. The one thing that kind of popped in my brain while we were watching was like, what kind of, like, first of all, it's a really interesting, like, prison. It's an interesting place to put someone that can see everything but can't be a part of it, which made me think of the author and, like, if there was a version of the mirror universe where he didn't have to, like, touch it to see or whatever, like, that would be almost ideal for an author character to be, so that they cannot touch the events and change them, but they can see them and record them. So I was like, I wonder if this could at all ever come back into play when it gets to like the author storyline.
That's a really, really interesting concept that I didn't think of, but I was thinking of the author just because of when Regina was like, oh, Henry will, like, you know, be able to find us. I was like, oh, because he's the author. That's right. He can just like write something down and it'll show where they were spending their time. But I really like your idea much better than the way that I wanted to get the author back into this storyline, because you're right, that is the perfect place if it does expand to different realms, and all you would have to do is just like walk to different places and tap things. It would get lonely, but I mean, if Isaac was still in the picture, this would have been the perfect loophole for which to like get rid of him and just send him
exactly.
there and think that the author's still doing his job, because right now we don't think the author's doing his job because Henry is going to school and doing all this stuff, so no one is documenting anything.
Exactly. Like, I wouldn't want to see Henry there because, you know, he's a fairly decent author despite the fact that he's not doing his job, but like, you know, he's not stepping in and getting involved like Isaac was. So it's like, if they can find an author who, you know, like Isaac, was kind of troublesome, putting him in a world like that would almost be the best of both worlds. It would contain him as well as giving him exactly what he needs to do his job without the temptations. So it's interesting.
Yeah, I really, really like that. Maybe that'll come true because, you know, we've been talking about a lot of random stuff on this podcast. And another thing that came true was the fact that they found a way to make Aladdin useful, which I just want to get through this because I want to have a really deeper conversation about Regina and Emma and the Evil Queen and their role in Henry's life. But I really do want to touch on this and not just shove it to the end. So Aladdin is hired as a thief because everybody suddenly realizes that, hey, if you're in town and you're the best thief in this town and every town, as he likes to point out, then why can't we use him? Which, you've been sitting around. You haven't done anything in years. But okay, fine. So they send him in because Zelina wants the sorcerer's wand because Belle appeals to her more sensitive side, saying, listen, we're kind of in the same boat here, and I don't want to lose my child to this monster, so can you help me? She basically wants to create a portal and leave, which I'm all for because I feel horrible for her, and if she can start over life somewhere else, great. I hope there's books there. But, you know, what did you guys think of the fact that they're trying so hard to get Aladdin and Jasmine to be useful, but really all we've seen from them is just them complaining about how they don't know what happened to Agrabah and, like, not doing anything about it? It's been, like, weeks.
Yeah. In a way, I kind of like the way that they're setting this up because I think Once Upon a Time has this problem of introducing a character and wrapping up their story so quickly. Sometimes that works, and sometimes that's solely their purpose, to come in for an episode and have their story shared with everybody else and have their problems solved. But at the same time, I like that they're kind of threading these two characters throughout the story, and they're touching on some of the main plot line, and hopefully they'll come back around later as much more important characters, and maybe our main characters, you know, Emma, Regina, all of them, will help Aladdin and Jasmine, and it'll all kind of tie in together. I get the frustration of, like, okay, we see them for the last 5 minutes of the show, and then it takes a whole nother episode until we get anything out of them for another 5 minutes at the end of the show. But I'm hoping the payoff is going to be there in the end.
Yeah, I'm not against them planting seeds like this and, like, you know, introducing a character and having them kind of be woven into unrelated storylines until theirs appears. But they can only do it for so long before it becomes old. Like, I still remember that Aladdin and Jasmine are there. So now we need to, you know, now we need to get to it. Like, they've used them a couple of weeks here. I'm okay with it, but we need to step it up now and find out what's going on with them.
Yeah, because we are, I mean, it is the March to mid-season right now. The show is off next week, but we're getting close to the halfway point of season six, and I'm just curious what their bigger role is, what the bigger role of the Agrabah story is, where's Jafar? There's a lot of questions that need to be answered, and now that they have the lamp, maybe we'll be able to cut to them more because they have something that is instigating their story and will allow them to have an activity to do besides sitting around and talking about Agrabah, which, I mean, I wouldn't want to see any of those conversations that were apparently happening, so.
I did a little Wikia searching after the episode, actually at the end of the episode, because Karen asked, like, who is the last person that was attached to the lamp? Like, in Wonderland or not in Wonderland, whatever, like, what do we know? Mm-hmm. And so I kind of went and looked via the Wonderland Wikia, and according to that, Jafar was the last known person attached to the lamp.
Oh, so the lamp changed the way he looked. That's interesting.
So he could, exactly, like, he could be in the lamp and has changed his look, but is the same Jafar, who knows? So I found that interesting, and maybe that's how we get him in Storybrooke, is they think it's going to be a friend in there, and it's not.
Yeah, that would be a great thing, because I was like, oh, maybe it's Will, but it's not, because yeah. Will was, like, you know, out and about.
That was literally my first thought, too, just because I just want Will back.
I'm just happy Michael Socha just is far away from the show because he deserves better. Because
you never know. They'll recreate, like, Will's twin brother and come up with some strange thing and they'll bring him back. Who knows? Yeah. I'm still waiting to figure out how they're going to bring back Robin Hood. You know, clearly a flashback or something. But
I know. I'm really... That's another thing. I'm waiting to hear anything about his return. That'll be quite interesting. Let's jump into Snow and David really quick, because they didn't really have much going on this week. They're both kind of down in the dumps and trying to really make the best of their situation and keep a positive, you know, happy face on. But it's hard. And it's, you know, we're watching them go through trying to figure out how they can still communicate to one another. And I loved that they used the cell phones to take videos of them with Neil, and they were writing each other notes, and David would make breakfast right before he woke Snow up. Like, it was, it looked like it was working and working pretty well, but you see at the end of that, like, I called it the other day, a Nicholas Sparks montage, where, you know, he, the weight of their separation is weighing on them, and the Evil Queen is sort of winning in this game that she has going on the side for, from her other, you know, win Henry over game. So how do you guys feel about seeing them try to make a hopeful situation out of such a tragic one?
I liked it. I think Kristen really nailed it when she said they just did that montage very well. They didn't rush it. And, you know, and then we saw how they were trying to, you know, interact with each other as best they could. I love the note that was, you know, the little crumpled up piece of paper. You know, it, I thought they really did it really, really well.
Agreed. I thought it was an adorable way to, like, show us them being our typical Snow and Charming, where we can, you know, we can handle this. We'll find the silver lining. Like, we'll leave each other notes and we'll, you know, we're still there. We both can see each other. It's a thing. And then, you know, you see how quickly it just starts to wear on them. And it, you know, they did that very, very well. I will say, poor Neil, that's probably the most he's seen of his parents in a long time. And he's like, guys, this is a lot of togetherness. Like, I might only see one of you at a time, but I'm pretty sure I saw you guys all day.
Yeah, especially when David wakes up and he's like, hey, man. And he's like, dude, mom just put me to sleep.
Like, I know you're awake right now, but it's time for sleeping. Yeah.
I like that they decided to do this in a way that showed us how they were feeling about it versus telling us, because that's a thing with the Charmings, is they talk out everything, which in normal relationships is fantastic. But for this show, like, sometimes it gets to be a bit much. But with the montage, you see the way that their story evolves very quickly in the first couple of minutes. And it begins with, like, oh, we're writing each other notes, and, like, it is very positive. We're leaving little gifts for each other. And, you know, Snow wakes up kind of sad and she sees the flowers, and suddenly her whole day has brightened. And then they don't tell us, but they show us with the blank, crumpled note that Snow feels defeated. And the fact that Charming interprets that correctly shows how close they are and how much they think alike. And it was just a really well written, well acted, well shot intro to the episode. And I really appreciated it.
Yeah, I really liked that, exactly what you said, the fact that they were showing us and not telling us, because we're so used to hearing these big, overwhelming speeches from them about positivity and keeping hope alive. And, you know, sometimes they do feel defeated and they won't ever say it. So to have to see it and make sure that the other one understands, I thought that that was really well done. Another couple that is able to communicate without actually talking is, surprisingly, Hook and Emma. Because Hook thinks, you know, something's not right with the fact that Emma just ran off to New York after, you know, the Evil Queen disguised as Regina says, oh, yeah, she went to New York to look for the dragon. She'll be back in a few days, and, like, conjures up that random voicemail. So, yeah, but he's tuned in. He knows that something's going on, and he goes off to investigate, which I thought was cute.
I love that, how, like, he's kind of the only one who's figured out technology and can, like, handle, like, the phone thing, and, like, everybody else seems permanently befuddled by it. But I do love that he seems to have grasped the concept of the cell phone now. I thought that was actually kind of fun.
Yeah, when in crisis, like, I need to know where my girlfriend is, he's able to hit that voicemail button pretty quickly to check his messages.
Although I have to say, as he was being blasted back by, you know, evil Queen Regina, and I'm like questioning, like, I was wondering, like, you know, did he hit a rock? Did he impale himself on his hook? I mean, he seems to get thrown around an awful lot with no significant injuries. I mean, he was thrown on a fairly, you know, rocky beach. I'm like sort of amazed at, like, the resilience of Hook.
Yeah, and I think Caitlin, actually, one of our fellow Hypeable buddies, tweeted something during the episode that was like, meanwhile, on a beach, Killian is still passed out. Like, all of this stuff is going on, and, like, Killian's just laying on the shore. He'll be fine.
Or I was just like, did he not just impale himself with his own hook? Like, I was seriously concerned there for a minute.
Well, he did try to impale someone with his hook, and he did come in and, you know, try to save the day. So he shows up, and he kind of threatens the evil queen as soon as she's about to do something to the other ones. Although his threat wouldn't have held any merit, because if he if he hurt her, nothing would happen, right?
Yeah, I don't. That was also part of the question that I had, is that I'm having trouble remembering why it is that they're not, like I said, to me, it was just so obvious. You got to put Humpty Dumpty Regina back together again. Like, to me, it's just sort of the obvious repair that has to happen. Or barring that, like, why have we not figured out some sort of way to immobilize, like, evil Queen Regina? Like, we seem to have, we can come up with a spell for just about everything else, but it seems like she's not bent on wrecking enough havoc, or they're not bent enough on trying to stop her. It's almost a little bit to me like it was last year when you said, here we are meandering through the underworld, you know, with no apparent reason to get in, to get out, or whatever. I sort of feel like the same year too. We're kind of meandering around with the evil queen and not really, I don't know, looking for solutions or how to deal with her or anything.
Well, I think one of the major factors is that the only person who has that much knowledge that is on their side at the moment is Regina, and Regina and the evil queen are thinking alike. So it's kind of at a standstill where if they, like we saw in this episode, where if Regina does come up with a plan that involves magic, at least, the evil queen has already thought of it or is able to think about it, like, really quickly and catch on to what Regina's doing. This time we kind of don't have Rumple on our side temporarily where he can think of something. We don't have that alliance with Zelina that we can rely on. So it's all the magic that we could use on I'm in Storybrooke wandering around, that the heroes could use on the evil queen is sort of in Regina would have to think of it. And so I think that, that just to me explains what's going on a little bit. But I do agree that they're not really putting their heads together. Even before this whole Snow and Charming thing and all of that, the gang itself wasn't really putting their heads together hard enough to figure out what they needed to do in order to stop her. So I do sense that is an underlying issue where it's not really like, they're not as gung-ho as they were in past seasons.
Well, and I think, like, Emma being a little distracted by her, you know, I'm gonna die thing has kept her from really putting her full weight behind trying to find a solution to the Evil Queen. And then you've got Snow and Charming, who are now distracted because they, you know, are dealing with their own curse. And it's like the Evil Queen has done a good job of distracting everyone else so that Regina is the only one who can come up with plans. And she's the only one that the Evil Queen has, like, an inside line on. She knows what Regina's going to do because she is Regina. Like, she has the same brain. So as Regina comes up with things, the Evil Queen is going to know around the same time. Like, they're going to come up with the same ideas. So I do think that's just part of it, is that at some point someone besides Regina is going to have to come up with an idea to either merge them or to get rid of the Evil Queen, or it's just going to keep continuing to be this, she gets a leg up on us, we, you know, family power with the rings or whatever, and we defeat her, and now we have to find another way, you know, to put her down once and for all.
Mm-hmm. Don't mock the family power with the rings, because they use bows already.
Like, they do. They need little rings, like Captain Planet. And
those awful our powers combined. I feel like this episode, too, is really ripping on the whole Snow Queen arc. Like, oh, we're going to put a mirror back together because that's the only way I can solve things. And, oh, we need to band together, like, without the literal bands of those kite ribbons. I was so mad that they already used the episode title Smash the Mirror, because clearly it would have worked a lot better here. And
And the number of times they called them his moms.
Oh.
Like, they said it at least a half a dozen times in this episode.
Case we've not forgotten, right? Yeah.
Right. And I was like, man, they just keep throwing it out there like, nope. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, they were really trying to drive that home. It was fine, because in this episode we were really focusing on what their roles are in Henry's life, and Emma sort of just lays all the cards on the table at one point when they're being threatened by the awesome CGI dragon. And she's like, listen, this is what you do, this is what I do. You didn't become that evil mother because I was there. We were able to balance each other out, and Henry has a dangerous but great life. You know, he is a well-adjusted kid. He is smart enough to pick up on when evil things are happening, and, you know, he is able to hold a plot all to himself, as we saw. And I don't know why Once Upon a Time didn't trust him with one until this episode, but he's able to do it. He was able to sense that something was wrong. He picked up on the fact that it was the evil queen a little late, but he's young. And, you know, he got Violet in on it, which I thought was awesome. And she did so well in that, like, moment. So, yeah, let's talk about Henry for a bit. What were your guys' feelings on him, watching him with the evil queen and just getting ready for a dance and, like, trying to, like, it was something so normal balanced with something so not normal. And I thought that was just, like, in my opinion, that was the perfect storyline for him to tackle.
Yeah, I loved it. I also loved the part where, like, you could see the moment of when him going, no, that's not right. You know, when she's like, posture, Henry. And you could just see him being like, oh, no, like, old young Henry, who was trapped here with evil queen when he was little before he went to find mommy Emma, you know, used to hear stuff like that. Like, you could almost hear it like a flashback in his head. Like, I really, really liked the way they did that. The only thing that I started to become concerned on, I don't know if anybody else felt like this too, but so at the end, once he like rescues like Emma and Regina on the other side of the mirror and they come back, and then she's saying, and you'll always be weak and whatever, you know, and then he stands up to her and he does the whole thing and says, but you're no matter what, you're always going to be alone and you're afraid of being alone. And obviously that gets right to the quick of her like that, like he found the wound, like really quite well. But then she starts coming at him, and I forget which, and then like Killian stops him. But I was like, you're not going to kill Henry, are you? Are you going to hurt Henry? Like, I was seriously concerned that she was going to hurt Henry. Did anybody else get that vibe? Like, pull his heart out or something. Like, I seriously was wondering if that was about to happen.
I figured there was some sort of threat or purple smoke poofing going to happen. Like, she was either going to try and take him to, you know, separate them again or something. Like, she was reacting to the insult and to the dig. And I'm sure that she had something cooking in her brain, but I never thought she's going to kill him, because as she like demonstrated in this episode, she might be the evil queen, but she did raise him. Like, she was a part of Regina and helped raise him, and I think she does care about him, maybe not as much as Regina does, but it's still kind of there. So I never thought she was going to kill him, but I thought she was going to do something in that moment.
Yeah, I feel like she used all of her, like, you know, if you were watching an old video game and you have, like, you know, all your different life level bars things, and her nice one was way drained by that point in the episode. She had, like, tried to appeal to him through Star Wars, and she tried to help him get ready for a dance, and she bit her tongue when she was with the Charmings. Like, you know, it was, she had drained all of that, and so she had nothing left but to attack, which is what she knows. If she's feeling threatened, you can easily take control of someone by ripping their heart out. And I think that she was very close, like you were saying, Laura, to crossing that line. I'm sure none of them would have let it happen in that particular moment, but that is the place where she could go. And this brings up the whole Cora thing, where Rumple even says to her, he's like, well, go by your mother's great life lesson, love is weakness. And so she's appealing to the loving side of Henry for most of the episode, but it is his weakness. And so if she has to control it, then she has to control it. She's not banking on love saving the day. And I think that that is an important thing to keep in mind, because she could cross that line at any moment. Her whole role this episode was, I thought, was great, because it brought up a lot of things that Regina is also dealing with and not really, you know, bringing up to the surface. Even the line that Henry kind of threw away at the Evil Queen, where he said, you know, you're going to be alone forever, that still hits Regina a little bit, because she's dealing with the fact that she thinks her son isn't going to be able to live without either her or Emma, or her and Emma at this point, because they're being faced with certain death. And she has to deal with the fact that she's still grieving for Robin, and she can't have anything nice in life because it's always ripped apart from her. And, you know, it's a lot weighing on her. And then we finally get to see her and Emma kind of bond over their mutual struggle. They're struggling with different things, but really they're not. They're both dealing with feeling like there's nowhere for them to go and nothing for them to do. And I really liked that we got them together for so much of the episode, because I think that their scenes are just really strong when they're working together and they're not in opposition. And the times that they butted heads, they were literally butting heads because they were like, oh, no, you should die. No, you shouldn't die. I should die. No, I'm going to die anyway. So you really, we shouldn't be sacrificing our lives. So I thought that their dynamic was just really well tapped into in this episode. Do you guys like when they're together and not fighting and, you know, fighting for a common cause, or not really?
Oh, I definitely do. And I think it shows how far both of them have come. And especially in this episode, because Emma sort of calls Regina out on being a martyr. And I think Regina often feels like she has to be that way in order to make up for her past sins, whereas nobody else really feels that she needs to do that anymore. But it's just her constant guilt that drives her to try to make those decisions, versus Emma, who feels like, you know, she is going to die. That's inevitable. So if she goes out sooner helping to save somebody, then that's fine. That might even be better. But they also both just went, okay, let's just do it together. And I feel like that's never really happened before for either one of them, because not only are they making the decision to sacrifice themselves, but they're also letting somebody else come in and save the day as well. And both of them can be a little selfish and a little stubborn, but in this moment, they saw the big picture. And they just wanted to help Henry, and they just wanted to get back to their son. And the fact that they have come this far in order to make that decision was actually, like, really well played out in this episode.
I was just going to say, I love seeing them on the same side. We've spent so long seeing them fighting against each other that now, like, getting a chance to watch them work together basically in every way is just, I'm on board.
Yeah, and I liked what you said, Karen, about them, you know, showing how each other has grown. I think that these two characters are just a great benchmark for that. Like, whenever we get them in a room together or a scene together, they really, because they're able to bring out the worst in each other, and when they bring out the best, then it's when you see how far they've come from episode one, where, you know, Emma's cutting down an apple tree and Regina's like, you know, threatening her with poison. You know, it's like we're not there anymore. We're in different territory. And we're also like moving out of the gray area of where they're still trying to figure out who they are to each other. We're kind of moving into more clarity with who they are in each other's lives.
And that is so, yeah, that is so great to see on television when a lot of female characters are often pitted against each other, especially when it comes to, like, you know, this isn't exactly the case with them, but a mother-stepmother kind of relationship where they're always at odds. And in this case, it's almost not even an issue anymore. It really isn't an issue anymore. They're both supportive. They've both accepted that they are Henry's mother and the other woman is also Henry's mother. And the fact that they can work together and it's not even a blip on the radar, I think is really powerful. They don't need to add that tension between them anymore because they have way too much else to concentrate on at the moment.
Yeah, there's a lot going on and I'm glad that they're finally over that hump of what's keeping them apart and at odds with each other, because there's just so much more to worry about in this world. The only other thing that's kind of left is something that I just want Karen to talk about because I'm sure she's really excited about it.
Okay. Basically, this is the Greek mythology part, right?
Okay. No, you're good.
I just wanted to make sure. Yeah, so Rumple just happens to have the hammer of Hephaestus sitting in his cabinet, which is, like, totally cool. And I was fist-pumping the air, and Kristen was a little concerned, but figured it out soon after. And we don't really know much about it, and, like, I tried looking it up. It's definitely a symbol of Hephaestus, but I don't know that I've ever read anything specifically about it. It's not like it's the Hammer of Thor, where there's a ton of mythology surrounding it, as far as I know. Yeah, she does try to get Henry to use it to smash the heart, and which I really appreciated. He was like, no, I know exactly what this will do to my heart, and I'm not going to let you do that. So he comes up with a third option instead. And yeah, just any time they tie anything back to Greek mythology, I get super excited. Not that I'm looking to revisit, you know, Hades or anything like that, but always looking forward to the possibility of some Greek gods stepping in.
Let me ask you a question, because when I was watching that scene, I had, like, looked away for a second, and I guess I lost the part where he was going to smash the heart. I was like, duh, he's going to slash the mirror. Did you guys not think he was going to just smash the mirror?
Well, they had done a really good job, and you know, props to Henry for putting it all together. They had kind of set it up in a way where we didn't know that smashing the mirror was going to be the solution. Like, it was an option. It was definitely an option. I'm glad Henry was smart enough to put it all together. But the Evil Queen had really set it up beautifully that he can save his mothers, which is a good thing, and it's doing good. But in order to do that, he has to kill an innocent. And he puts it all together and realizes that she wants him to tarnish his soul in order to have something in kind with her. Like, she's just trying to turn him around. So while it may, you know, if you're just watching, you know, stepping back and kind of watching it, yeah, smashing the mirror probably seems like it's what's going to happen. I personally didn't necessarily see it coming. I knew there was going to be another solution, but I wasn't like, duh, he's going to smash it. I was just like, come on, Henry, put it all together. You can come up with something. And so when he did, it, you know, it felt right. I just wasn't necessarily like, that's of course what's going to happen.
Yeah, I thought he was going to, like, either, like, turn around and throw the hammer somewhere or do something. When he smashed the mirror, my first thought was, oh, okay, as long as he smashes the mirror, they're still stuck there. So at least he knows where they are and something can be done about it. Like, they can figure out a next step. I kind of thought that they were actually going to stay in the mirror universe for, like, another week, which could have been interesting, but I'm happier with the outcome where they got out and Henry was the hero. So, you know, he resisted darkness. He was the hero who saved his moms. And, you know, it didn't, all the credit didn't go to someone else, because I think Henry deserved that. And then he got to go and enjoy a nice evening with his lady friend. So that's good. Also, I'm not buying, like, this middle school thing. They're too old for middle school. They should have just, like, really played with the timeline and just put them in high school because, boy, my eighth grade dances were not that smooth.
And I personally love all the John Hughes references. Like, Henry's got taste and he's got moves and it's adorable.
Oh, Henry is smooth. I would have been so in love with him in middle school. Please.
Oh, he is so adorable. And I really like that they worked in the fact that, you know, this season is all about, like, identity and who am I and I don't know what I'm doing. And, like, Violet even had her own mini identity crisis with, like, am I a jock? Am I a princess? Am I a stoner? I don't know what to do. I only saw one Breakfast Club movie and now I need to pick. So I thought that that was really cute. The only thing we really have left is that the evil queen and Rumple made a deal when she took the hammer, and that was that they would be allies for the foreseeable future. And Rumple sort of cashes in on his side of the bargain when, after he goes to, so he's been, like, sulking this whole episode and, you know, spinning a bunch of gold, and he goes and takes some to Belle, and he makes, like, this bracelet thing that would not allow her to do anything to the baby or leave.
Oh my god, because
he's the worst.
Sorry. Like, yeah, I was like, what? Yeah, I was.
It's not even, at this point, it's just not even worth unpacking, because it's just like,
yeah,
it's just so awful. And I'm just not sure what their deal is with this show, where they still think that this is a viable relationship to keep showing.
Yeah, I do want to say, and, like, Laura, I'm definitely not disagreeing with you over the fact that, like, Belle definitely needs to step up to the plate continuously. But I did like the fact that she kind of threw down in front of Rumple and was, first of all, super pissed off that he did that to her. But also that she was like, once I get this off, I'm running as far and fast away from you as I possibly can. Like, she's not mincing words. He knows how upset she is, and I think that was really important for them to throw into this episode.
Yeah, I mean, I did appreciate that she said that, but there's also, I guess what bothers me is that I'm not saying that there aren't women who give guys who are abusive chances after chances after chances. Certainly that exists, and I think not to portray that on some level is disingenuous, because there are people who make that choice. But I feel like it's Belle, and I feel like, at a certain point, I'm like, did you watch the Disney movie? Because the relationship that she has with Rumple, I mean, for me, the huge turning point was, I think it's now two seasons ago, where she had the dagger and, like, you know, stopped him from, you know, commanded his soul and stopped him from hurting people. And then he's just perpetually, I don't know, let people down, and everybody else can see it but her. Now, I mean, obviously now she's kind of making this choice or this decision, but it does not a part of you feel like she'll still go back to him? Maybe that's just me. See, I feel like she will go back to him. And it is so clear that every single time he makes a choice, the choice is consistently for him, all about him. Every motive is all about him. So I'm just not so clear that she's not going to go back to him.
Prior to the last, like, couple of episodes, I would have absolutely agreed with you that the show keeps drawing her back to him and keeps talking about their love and how, you know, they will somehow her love is stronger than his need for power and all of this stuff. They've drilled that into our heads for a couple of seasons now. But the last couple of episodes, I feel like Belle is finally seeing him clearly. She's finally starting to realize that he cares about himself. He wants this baby, not because he loves her, but because he's trying to trap her there. He's trying to keep them there. It's not out of love anymore. It's out of what he wants. And she's seeing all of this now. I don't think if she's given the choice, she goes back to him just willy-nilly. If he and I don't think it's possible, but if for some way, shape, or form proves that he loves her more than he loves himself and loves power, maybe she goes back, but I don't think that's possible anymore. I don't think she can see him that way anymore. Like, in this episode, she said, like, you truly are the beast. Like, she doesn't see the man anymore. She only sees the beast now. And I also loved the reference to him being Rumpelstiltskin and taking children. Like,
yeah,
it's like we've gone full circle.
Yeah.
That he's not the good beast that we know from the story anymore. He's back to being Rumpelstiltskin, the creepy guy who steals children.
Right. And even say, and there was even some reference, I don't remember, it was, I think it was Alina that made it along the lines of, yeah, because it worked out so well with your first son. Like, you know, I thought that was like a very interesting shot. Although it was Alina and herself too. I'm like, seriously, can you not get over yourself? Like, she's another one. But anyway, yeah.
She can't decide what she wants to do. And so she finds herself on the wrong side of Rumpel's mood in this week's episode. And Rumpel feels that some of his power is being threatened, because when she, way back when in New York, was like, oh, I'm going to save your life, she put linked them in some way so that he can never hurt her, because she, like, controls whether or not he has a heart attack, I guess.
And, right. Yeah. It like, rebounds on him. Yeah. Or something like that, I guess, is what it is.
Yeah. And so his first instinct isn't like, oh, this is something I need to work through. This might be a good test to show that I don't care if someone has power over me. And the first thing he does is he's like, we have to kill Zelina, and you're going to do it because I'm an awful human being to the evil queen.
Right.
Like, it's just so ridiculous.
Well, here's the thing with Zelina, too. Like, I wasn't real thrilled with how Belle approached her with the idea of, she's like, well, we do have something in common. And she's like, she starts talking about, we know what it's like to be disappointed in the men we trust, and I'm like, and the people we love, and you with your sister. And I'm like, yeah, but at the same time, like, Zelina's done a lot of horrible things. You know, there's a there's a basis for that.
Just because there's, like, a baby in her arms doesn't make her, like, Mother Teresa all of a sudden.
Right. And even with her, the baby was very,
yeah, like, the way she got the baby is horrible.
Yeah, I'm like, there's a reason for this. Like, it just, I don't know. I was finding that somewhat troublesome.
Yeah, well,
I want to know if the evil queen's hesitance at the end of the episode, because clearly she was, like, surprised, didn't really know how to respond to Rumpel's declaration that Zelina had to die. Do you guys think that it's because she doesn't want to kill her sister, or do you think it's because Zelina is a weapon that she can use and she doesn't want a chance not having that weapon on her side?
I think the initial reaction was not to kill her sister. I think that I want to give her the benefit of the doubt that there is that something in there, because her biggest fear is being alone, and the closest person she has in Storybrooke to not being alone is Zelina. Even though they're at odds on again, off again, it's that is the only true connection she's felt in Storybrooke. And I do think it was more so her sister, but you do bring up a great point where at the end of the day, she is on the same wavelength as Rumpel, where you're a tool that I could use as opposed to a friend, an ally, and sister.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you guys that she did have some sort of familial loyalty, because Henry had just, like, put her down over, you'll never have a family. Family is what gives us power. So, like, maybe she's balking at it because Zelina is kind of family. And if she can find a way to really bond with her, then maybe she won't be alone.
But I do like that point, because I think that that will come into play later on, Karen, what you're saying about, is she a tool or is she her sister? I can actually, like, see that conversation playing out from Zelina's side. Like, oh, are you just saving me because I'm your, like, I'm a ploy and something you want to carry out? Or am I actually your sister? how she's like tied to a stake or something because they don't know what else to do with witches but burn them. So yeah, that's about wraps up everything that kind of went on this week. Next week, the show is off for, I think, the American Music Awards. They played that commercial every commercial break, so I'm assuming that's what's happening. We might be a little late coming back after Thanksgiving because people are going to be traveling and some people are going to be at football games. I'm not saying who, but it's me. I'm going to be at a football game.
I was going to say, it may be a Patriots fan.
Yeah, so the episode might come out just a little bit later that week, but we will be back to talk about it. And there is just one piece of listener feedback that I have been putting off talking about, even though I want to address it really quickly. And I forget who asked this. I am so sorry. But someone asked what the ratings mean for next season with what they look like right now. As of last week, not including this week, Once Upon a Time is averaging a 1.1 in the 18 to 49 demographic, which is really the only one that matters. And I think they're doing fine. I think they're on track for a definite season renewal. If it tanks the rest of this season, they'd probably still get renewed and have maybe an episode cut or something. I know ABC's trying shorter episode seasons across the board. I mean, Scandal got one because Kerry Washington was pregnant, but it will be interesting to see how shorter seasons do on ABC in general with all of their programming, because they're not really, they don't have a lot of new programming, and all of the new programming is either already canceled or canceled before it's airing. That'll be interesting. I think it's performing pretty well, even compared to the other ABC shows that are on after it. The ratings tend to go down from after Once on, including Secrets and Lies. And Quantico's not doing too hot, but I think Quantico...
No, it's not. I really like Quantico. And actually, I've been working with Timeless, and it started strong, and now it's starting to seriously tank. I'm like, oh,
yeah,
crap.
Everything is actually starting to seriously tank, which is really interesting.
I'm wondering if it's just like election, like, I don't know, like people just got very wrapped up in the politics of election and haven't like really watched TV. Like, I don't know. I'm curious if that has any bearing on it.
I think we're in a normal slump right now. We'll definitely see an uptick when we head into winter finale time, which for Grey's Anatomy might be this week. Like the TGIT shows, I think, end this week.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're definitely going to see an uptick there. There are still some really strong performers across the board. I mean, the shows that are getting the ratings, guys, are white men comedies. They're The Big Bang Theory, Last Man Standing, and it's like sixth season is getting like a 1.4 and sometimes a 2. It's unbelievable. Dr. Ken is doing really well. Like, there are shows that are just, yeah, and they're on Friday nights. Like, they have the worst time slot. And all of your NCIS's and nonsense are, CBS is the ratings king, except for Elementary, which is performing, like, really far below even the lowest rated show.
Yeah, like, I know. It's like, so, they're just keeping it just to finish it out. And
yeah,
then
they're just going to let it happen. It's bringing in money for the network. They're just going to let it do its thing. There's nothing waiting to take that time slot. So I think it'll be okay. Like, MacGyver has a 1.1. Who watches MacGyver? I mean.
Oh, I know, right?
Yeah, probably. Sunday nights
have... It had its day, you know? Like, seeing young MacGyver wasn't that compelling. Not really.
Yeah, like, Sunday nights have always been really competitive, but Once is in a good time slot, being at 8 o'clock, like, there's not a whole lot to working against it besides football.
Which only starts in the latter half, like, unless exactly. You have a game wrapping up on CBS or something.
Exactly. Like, it's on at a good time because after that you've got Walking Dead and Game of Thrones when it's airing, and you've got a lot of competition after it, but the 8 o'clock time slot has kind of always belonged to Once Upon a Time. So I think it'll be okay as long as, you know, it continues to, if the show continues to be good, I think it'll continue to do well.
Yeah. And it Once Upon a Time is a huge, huge DVR and international audience, so it's not, I mean, even over the holidays it gets good playback ratings and stuff. I did a little look into it. I mean, internet, we don't really know how many people are watching it internationally because those ratings don't really come out, but the fan base alone is so big international, just from, like, you know, being involved in the fandom for however many years. It's really big all over the place. So I think it'll be fine. Definitely not worried about next season. I'd be interested to see them do a shorter season. Like, you know, if this were to, because they're really good at half seasons. I know this season is actually going to play out the whole season, which I guess I'll make a decision at the end of this year if I think that they have the staying power to crank out 22 more episodes. But, you know, they have their slower episodes, and I think that they can do a really great job if only given 13 episodes. So we'll have to wait and see, and enjoy your week off next week, everyone. I'm looking forward to it. I know I've said this all day on many different podcasts, but I am really looking forward to having next Sunday off. So until we return with Season 6, Episode 9, Changelings, I'm Brittany.
I'm Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Laura.
Bye, guys.
Bye.